We're holding on Nunches Amud Beis, the seventh line of the wide lines. Now that we went through the Seven Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, so now the Gemara is going to talk about some other individual chiyuvim that B'nai Noach have that are not necessarily part of the Seven Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So the first one, Amar Rav Chanina, Ovid Gechovim Shehikas Yisrael, a goy hitzayid chayav misa. Then that goy is chayav misa for doing that. So the Rambam holds we mean misa bidei shamayim. Different other Rishonim and Achronim talk about whether maybe it means Misa B'dei Adam, because the proof we're going to bring is from Moshe killing the Mitzri in Mitzrayim, but maybe that was a special case. So one thing the Binyan Shlomo points out, one thing is on the face of it has to be B'dei Shemayim. Otherwise, why would we need a mitzvah of Shev Mitzvah Noach not to kill a Yid if he's Chayiv Misa even for hitting him, for sure for killing him. Anyway. So Shenemar, as we find by Moshe, Vayifan Koy V'choy, Moshe looked in both directions, Vayav Ki Einish, and he saw that there's nobody there, which also means, as Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, that he saw that this Mitzri is not going to have any descendants who are Gerim or otherwise good people. Vayachas HaMitzri V'goymer, and he hit the Mitzri and killed him and then buried his body in the sand. So we see that the guy was Chayav Misa for hitting a Yid. Now, one way of understanding it again is he is in fact Chayav Misa's Beis Din, and therefore Moshe was acting as a Beis Din to do that. The other possibility is it's Misa B'dei Shamayim. We do find there was one opinion that Moshe killed him with the Shema Mefodosh, and in that case, one reason, one point with it, the point of bringing that pasuk would be either as an asmachta to show that such a person is indeed Chayav Misa. And Marsha points out the fact that in this case, normally maybe he'd be Chayav only Misa B'dei Shamayim, but Moshe, who had the ability with Ruach HaKodesh to know that the guy's not going to have any good descendants, then he was actually able to kill him outright. But that wouldn't necessarily apply in that wouldn't necessarily apply to other people. Another one. Rav Chanina also says in this connection, a soter lawyer shall Yisrael, a person who slaps a yid on the cheek, and here we're talking about even a fellow yid. Ke'ilu soter lawyer shall shchina, as if he's slapping the fate, as if he's slapping the cheek of the shchina. In other words, a person has a yid has on him a tzelem alekim, and therefore, when a person is tampering with that and hitting that, then it's considered like he's tampering with the shechina. Marshall points out, in particular, we find that Yaakov's image is on the kisei hakavod, and as we're going to learn soon in the Gemara, only atim kriyim adam. So a yid, most of all, even though all of humanity is created in tzelem alekim, but we Jews have more of that kind of tzelem, and therefore, a person slaps a yid, then it's more considered as if he's slapping the Shekhinah. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Moikesh Adam Yola Kodesh. The simple meaning of the pasuk is something moikish means a stumbling block. So when a person, when moikish adam, when a person stumbles and does an aveira, yola kodesh, then it means that he's wounding his kedusha. But here the Gemara is darshaning it hanoike. Here the Gemara is darshaning moikish miloshen noikish, that he's that he's hitting. That he's hitting, so he's hitting Adam, a person, Atam Kurim Adam. Yola Kodesh is as if he's lawyer, Yola from the same Shodesh as lawyer, the cheek or the jaw, Kodesh of the Holy One of Hashem. So therefore, so by darshaning the pasuk that way, we get this point that a yid slaps another yid is considered like is considered like slapping the Shekhinah. Okay, the Gemara continues. Magbia avde Shabbos simen. That is the simen for the next three statements that the Gemara is going to say about that the Gemara is going to say. So the first one, Amar Shlokesh, Magbia yodei chaveri. A person lifts up his hand against somebody else. Even if he didn't actually hit him yet, nikra rosha, just for lifting up his hand against a fellow yid, he's called a rosha. Shenemar. As we have in that story with Moshe, he said to the Rosha, why are you hitting your fellow Yid? It doesn't say, why did you hit him? So it means, it says, why will you hit him? It means, so even though he didn't hit him yet, he's still already called a Rosha just for doing that. One point is that so Marshall makes the point. How do we know that maybe it means he's telling maybe it means he told the Russia, this person who was already a Russia, Lama Sakareaka. How do we know as a result of lifting up his hand against him, he gets to be called a Russia? And one point is because the Pasuk doesn't say if it meant that now, if it meant that now that from now on he's a Russia, then if it meant that he was a Russia before, then it should have said Vayomer, and he said Russia, Lama Sakareaka. When it says La Russia to the Russia, that implies, in other words, we're talking about a person who was not yet a Russia, but now he became a Russia as a result of lifting up as a result of lifting up his hand. So that's how we get that. Almost the Iri Omar Rabchanina Nikrachoite. The Iri says in the name of Rabchanina, beyond that, even a person who does that, who lifts up his hand against a fellow Yid, is called a choite, is called a sinner. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, we find by Bnei Eli, where they were they the by Bnei Eli, they were they were taking parts of the korbanos when they weren't supposed to, and doing other things, and then doing other things like that. And the Pasuk says that they would threaten people, if you don't give it to me willingly, I'll take it by force, which implies that they were lifting up their hands against people. And the Pasuk continues, the sin of the young men of Hophni and Pinchas was very great. So in other words, we see that so they were lifting up their hand, they're threatening, like the word biyod chazaka. So in other words, Maharsha says, even though on the face of it the Aveira was that they were taking pieces of the korbanos that they weren't supposed to, and taking them before the chaylev was even brought on the Mizbeach, but since you have lokachti, and right after that chatas an orim, then we understand that the chatas includes is all, that the chatas all by itself, the Aveira they're doing all by itself, is the fact that they're lifting up a hand against a fellow Yid. Rav Huna Omer Tikotzitz Yodei. Rav Huna says, matter of fact, a person who lifts up his hand against somebody else deserves to have his hand chopped off. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Zroya Roma Tishover, the high lifted arm will be broken. So he's lifting up his hand, then it deserves to be broken and cut off. And the Gemara says, in fact, Rav Huna kos yoda. As a matter of fact, Rav Huna actually one time did that. There was a person who regularly was hitting other people, and Rav Huna ordered that his hand should be chopped off. On what grounds did Rav Huna do that? Well, I mean, he did just say you're allowed to, but it should be cut off. But that doesn't mean that a Beis Din should actually do it. However, Rashi points out, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that Beis Din sometimes can do unusual punishments in order to get people to do the right thing. So this would be an example of that. The situation was this person was hitting people all the time, and therefore Rav Huna judged that he actually has to have his hand chopped off, based in Makan V'Onshin Shalom in HaTorah, as we learned previously on Daf Mem Vav. The Tosfos then points out. Tosfos points out it might not only be that kind of thing. It might not only be that that might not only be as a matter of Shalom and HaTorah that it was a one-off thing. Tosfos says it actually might be that he is, since he is Darshaning a Pasuk, Ozroya Roma Tishover, then maybe indeed he means that it's the actual technical din to do that. On the other hand, Tosfos says when he's not rogel to do that, we're not talking about that. We have other examples in the Gemara where a person is fined for hitting other people. Here we're talking about this person was doing it regularly. Onward. I know there seems to have been some glitch with you guys hearing, so afterwards I'll put up the recording up until now, that's the sham later on. So to continue, towards the bottom of Nun Chesamid Beis, Rabbi Loza Omer ain't like Takana Ela Kvura. We're talking about a person who was hitting other people. So here we had, first we said that he's first we said he's a Rosha, then we said he's a Choite. Rav Huna says his hand should be chopped off, and we're saying an example where Rav Huna actually did that. So now Rabbi Loza says, ain't like Takana Ela Kvura. The only thing that you can do, the only way you can fix up such a person is to bury him. In other words, he deserves to be killed and buried. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'ish zroya loy ha'oretz. The man of the arm to him is the land. So in other words, a person who regularly uses his arm and his hand to lift up and to hit people, he deserves to be in the land, in the ground, buried. Rabbi Lazar also says, here's another drasha from this, here's another drasha from this pasuk. Land is given only to those who have a strong arm. In other words, who should be buying land? Only people who have a strong arm, because after all, you're going to have, otherwise you're going to have a lot of possibilities. You're going to have animals that come and try to and try to get into his farm and eat things. You have ganavim. You have people who are going to try to sue him in Beis Din for claim of the land. So he needs to be strong to withstand all of that. The same pasuk, the man of the strong arm, to him is the land. In other words, only in other words. If a person is a, basically, Rabbi Lazar is saying, if a person is a pushover, if a person is very easily is very easily cowed by things that are by opposition, whether it's of animals or people or whatever, then he's not going to do well as a landowner because he's going to wind up he's going to wind up losing his land or losing his produce or whatever. Marsha explains on this, first of all, on the previous drasha, that Ish Zroya Loi Ha'aretz, the man of the arm, deserves, in other words, a person who hits people, deserves to be buried. Marsha says the vort is that he's lifting up his hand where he shouldn't be, so therefore he gets lowered down into the land where he winds up. As far as this Marsha says a different explanation. We don't mean that he's strong to withstand the animal, the challenges from animals and people and whatnot. It means rather that he has pashut the physical raw power to work the earth. Farming is hard work. So we're saying, in other words, Rabbi Lazar is saying, listen, if you're going to be a landowner, you better realize you're going to have to roll up your sleeves and put in your muscles. Continues the Gemara. V'omer in this connection, the pasuk says, the man who works his land will be satisfied with bread. So that means, if a person makes himself a slave to the land, and he realizes he has to put in a lot of effort into the land, so Maharshal says this goes together with the previous drasha. We just said a farmer has to put in a lot of work. So Rish Lakish is telling you exactly that. If you're going to own land, then yeah, you're going to have to put in yourself in as an eved. Yisvalochem, then you're going to be satisfied with bread. V'imlav lo yisvalochem. If not, then he's not going to be, because he's not going to put in enough effort. He's not going to get much of a crop. It also means in Torah, for example, if a person doesn't put in much effort into learning, he's not going to see much much satisfaction from it. The point is that we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, there's an expression that says Adam la'omo yulod, a person was created in order to toil, and the Gemara says they're Ashrei Misha Mole baTorah, happy and fortunate is the person whose hard work is in Torah. So we're saying, therefore, that so we're saying so we're saying, therefore, that that yeah, a person has to put in effort, whether it's in farming or whether it's in Torah, and only then is he going to see results. All right. Getting back to Bnei Noach, the Gemara continues. If a goy keeps Shabbos, then he's chayev misa. For an entire, if he keeps it for an entire day, like we do. Shenema for Yom V'Layla Lo Yishbosu, as the pasuk says, day and night they should not cease. So in context, the pasuk is talking about after the Mabul, Hashem is telling Noach that the seasons will always continue to be every year, and the day and night, it won't be like during the Mabul where there was no day and no night. From now on, this will not cease. The world will continue to function normally. But the Gemara is also understanding it to mean that it's being told to Bnei Noach, day and night they shall not cease. There should never be a 24-hour period when they're ceasing from work. And we said we learned earlier in the Gemara that when the goyim or when the Bnei Noach are warned not to do something, then all by itself that constitutes a chiyuv misa for them. So therefore, so if they're over on that, even though it doesn't say any place that there's a chiyuv misa for that, but now we know because they're told not to lo yishposu, then therefore they're chayiv misa for it. Here also that Amram says we don't mean chayiv misa. We don't mean chayiv misa of Beis Din. We mean that chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, and therefore that if a goy is doing this, then we inform him, don't do this. You chayiv misa b'dei shemayim, and Beis Din can punish him as they see fit. But not that they would actually, not that they would actually execute him. So there's a lot of discussion about that, about Maybe the Gemara is assuming, the Gemara is going to ask a question on this in a minute. Maybe the Makshin thinks that it means that the person is actually executed for it. And the answer is that we're saying that he's not, that he's not. It's only we warn him that he is Chayiv Misav Deshamayim for it. The reasoning behind it, there's also a lot of discussion about the reasoning behind why what usually a goy is allowed to do any mitzvahs that he is allowed to do mitzvahs as he sees fit. He has the Shev Mitzvah Menoyach. He is allowed to take on himself other mitzvahs as well that he's not chayav in. So what would be the reason? So first of all, I mean, the two major points in it. One is that the Eibishter created the world is supposed to be a productive place, and especially the Bnei Noyach are supposed to, their purpose in the world is in order to do things in the world for us Jews, as we know, all the time. For example, when we have their sciences and technologies and inventions and whatnot, where we use them for Torah purposes, so they have to be at work at that. If they're not doing that, then means they're not fulfilling their purpose in the world, and therefore we're saying they're chayiv misa. There's a variation of an explanation on that. A couple of variations on that explanation. So the Torah Tmimah makes a point on this pasuk exactly that a person in life is supposed to be productive. So for us Jewish people, Hashem said one day a week, Shabbos, your productivity is going to be learning Torah instead of working like everybody else does. But since the Gemara is going to say soon that a goy is not allowed to learn Torah with certain exceptions, then therefore he doesn't have that option, and therefore the only thing is for him to work on Shabbos rather than not work on Shabbos, because otherwise there's no way for him to be productive. I saw once a variation on that also, that the Eibishter created the world. You have to work in order to eat, like we were just saying in the Gemara before. If you're going to be a farmer, for example, you have to put in a lot of effort into it. Well, then, for a non-Jew, then he has to do that every day. He has to be working in order to earn his keep for that day. For us Jewish people, Hashem made an exception and says one day a week you don't have to work that day. Instead, you work the previous days and you eat on that day, Shabbos. But for them, they don't have that exception. So that's one major reason behind it. The other major reason there that Amram explains is that the Bnei Noach are not allowed to make up a religion of their own. They can keep our mitzvah. They can keep the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach. They can choose to keep for themselves certain mitzvahs that they want, but they can't make up a new religion of their own. And that includes to be designating one day a week as a day of rest. That's something that's part of our religion, and it's not part of. And then if they add it to theirs, then it's considered that they're making themselves a new religion. So the Gemara continues. Amar Ravina afilu sheni b'Shabbos, and Ravina continues that would be so even if they make their day of rest on Monday, let's say. So in other words, if it's on Shabbos, if it's on our Shabbos, then obviously we're saying that's also. If they do it, let's say on Friday or on Sunday, fine. You have other religions that have those as their day of rest. So then you could say he's trying to follow that religion, and that's also a problem because he can't. As a Ben Noach, he's not supposed to be making up a different religion. But on Monday, there's no religion that has a day of rest on Monday. So even if he's doing it on Monday, so you would think that it has nothing to do with any other religion. So Ravina tells us it's still also for him. So the Gemara asks, "V'lech shavagnat gabi zayin mitzvahs." In that case, if we're saying that he's chayav misa for such a thing, then it should be considered one of the shev mitzvahs b'noyach. And the answer is kikachoshiv shev al tase. The answer is when we're counting among what are considered in the shev mitzvahs b'noyach, then it's only things where Hashem is telling him sit and don't do this, don't kill, don't steal, don't do arayas, etc. So therefore, those are things. But kumase, like a choshev, it's not counting things that he has to do. He always saying, get up and every day do some work, then that's not being counted. All right, the Gemara asks, v'hadinim kumasehu. What do you mean, though? The mitzvah of dinim, to have bote dinim, to judge the Bnei Noach, that's a kumase, actually set up judges, v'kachoshev, and it's counted. And the answer is kumase, v'shev v'altase ninhu. The answer is because with dinim, there's both. There's a kumase, go set up bote dinim, but also shev val tasa. It also includes a shev val tasa even when there aren't people coming before them. It means they have to make sure the individual bnei noyach have to make sure not to be doing anything wrong, not just set up bote dinim and go to them when necessary, but also they have a mitzvah not to be wronging one another financially and not to be over on their other mitzvahs, and therefore that can be considered a shev val tasa. You want to ask something? Fine. So that's it. So they can't keep Shabbos. So this has implications nowadays. You have a person who's in the process of Geirus. There's a well-known thing that as long as he hasn't finished his Geirus, he's supposed to be Mechalel Shabbos in at least one way in order not to violate this Akum Shashavas. So it happens that it happens when people are in their process of Geirus that they do that. The Rav will tell them turn on a light switch on Shabbos or something like that. Onward. Really, whatever. If a goy is involved in learning Torah, then he's chayav misa. Again, we don't necessarily mean chayav misa based in. We may mean chayav misa b'dei shemayim. But in other words, still, this is another thing that's off limits to him. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. That Hashem, Moshe taught us the Torah as an inheritance, implying Moroshah Lonu, Torah to Lonu Moshe Lonu Moroshah V'lo. It's a Moroshah. It's an inheritance for us, but not for them. The Ran even talks about it might conceivably be included in the issue of Gezel, because they're stealing it from us. It might be included, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that since the Torah is considered like a Naira Mairosa to us, it might be like what we learned before about a Goy having relations with a Naira Mairosa. So the Gemara asks again, why isn't this included in the Sheva Mitzvahs? And here we can't say before, because like before, that it means because Sheva Mitzvahs are not things they should do, but things they shouldn't. Because here we're saying he shouldn't be learning Torah, which is something which is an active thing. And the answer is exactly that. So it wasn't the Ran, it's the Gemara over here. The Mefarshim discuss more details behind this, whether this means that on the basis of what the Gemara is going to say over here, he would actually be Chayiv Misa based in, or whether it means he'd only be Chayiv Misa B'dei Shemayim. So Manda Amar Moirasha, Nigzok of Gozullah. So if you say that it's a matter of Moirasha, it's an inheritance, then it means they're stealing it from us, and Gezel is one of their Sheva Mitzvahs. Again, that may mean we actually consider it Gezel, and they're actually Chayiv Misa based in for it, or it may mean that it's not Gezel per se, but nevertheless, it's sort of in that category, and therefore he'd be Chayiv Misa B'nei Shemayim. The Manda Amar Ma'orosa, but we can also darshan the word Ma'orosa as if it said Ma'orosa, that the Torah is betrothed to us, like a Naira Ma'orosa. Well, then, like we learned before, Dine Kenaira Ma'orosa to Beskila, then it would mean that he'd be Chayiv Skila, just like a Goy has relations with a Jewish Naira Ma'orosa. So again, we don't necessarily mean that he's literally getting Skila for it, but in other words, that it is also to him. Marashah makes a point. Both Shabbos and Torah are considered like a spouse to the Jewish people. Shabbos we call a kala, and the Torah also we're saying over here is Moirasa. So more than anything else, then we're saying, unlike most of the other mitzvahs that we have, as we said before, the Rambam writes, a goy is allowed to, besides his shev mitzvahs b'nei noach, he's allowed to take on himself individual mitzvahs if he wants them. He's allowed to take on tzedakah. He's allowed to take on davening, kibud av ve'eim, many other mitzvahs. He can bring korbanos if he wants to, etc. But these two uniquely have a marital relationship with the Jewish people, and therefore they're off limits to him. So the Gemara goes on, and here also, by the way, there's, well, so, okay, let's finish this piece, and then we'll talk about. So the Gemara says, Meisvi, though, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Hoyer Reb Meir Omer. Reb Meir used to say, Minayin shafil, how do we know that even a goy, if he occupies himself with Torah, he's on the level of a Kohen Gadol. He's on a very great level. Why a Kohen Gadol? Tosfos points out, in particular, the Gemara elsewhere mentions Mamzer Tamid Chacham Kodem LeKohen Gadol Amoretz. That as great as a Kohen Gadol is, even any Tamid Chacham, even a Mamzer is greater than him. And the Gemara darshens it from a pasuk that we say refers to the Kohen Gadol. So here, in the same vein, the Gemara is saying that even a goy who's on an even lower level of kedusha than a Mamzer, nevertheless, he's still, if he learns Torah, then he's on the level of the Kohen Gadol. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Hashi Yasha Yasa Oisim HaAdam. The pasuk says that man will do them and live in them, meaning to learn the words, to learn Torah, and observe it. And now it doesn't say, now it says ha'adam, it doesn't say which would limit it to the Jewish people, ela ha'adam, but rather ha'adam, which means all of humanity. Now, Rashi points out that according to this, it would mean Rav Meir would disagree with the drasha that we have in other places in Shas, Atam Kruim Adam, that only we Jewish people are called Adam, because here we see that Rav Meir is saying that Ha'adam includes all of humanity. On the other hand, Tosfos discusses here and in some other places that there is a difference between Adam and Ha'adam. Adam means specifically we Jewish people, Ha'adam means all of humanity. And Tosfos brings a few different proofs for that. Another answer Tosfos says is that there can be a difference between when it uses the word Adam, when it comes to punishment, when it comes to things involving punishment, then we can say that Adam means then it means that the non-Jews can be called Adam as well. We don't just want to use the name Jewish people over there, but we're talking about a positive thing. If it meant to limit it only to Jews, then it would have said so. So it says Ha Adam. So Rav Meir continues Holamanta Shafilo Ovid Kachovim Oisik Patora Harik Kohen Gadol. So you see from that anyone who's included in Ha Adam, which includes Goyim as well, then if they learn Torah, if they're Yasa Oisim Ha Adam, if they're he's involved in learning Torah, then Rechai Abraham will live with it, and he will be on the level of the Kohen Gadol. So what are you telling me that if he learns Torah, he's Chayav Misa? And the answer is Hosan b'sheva mitzvos yidhu. That means that they're allowed to learn their sheva mitzvahs, the details of them. Then not only they're allowed to, they should. And when they do, then they're on the level of a kohen gadol. Here we're talking about the rest of the Torah, where they have no business learning it. Now here you have within that there's quite a bit of discussion among the poskim about the ins and outs of that, what exactly is allowed and what exactly isn't allowed for them to learn. Is there a difference between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh? A relevant Gemara also, as the Gemara mentions in Chagiga, that in most divrei Torah, you're not supposed to give over words of Torah to the Goyim. So you have that, and you have our Gemara over here, So there's a lot of discussion about that. What exactly is the scope of the Isser? Is there in fact an Isser to teach it to them? Or is it more that there's an Isser on them to learn? There's a lot of discussion among Achronim about that. The Maharshal, for example, is talking very against the idea of teaching Torah to Goyim. That's not just, in other words, they're not allowed to learn, but we're not allowed to teach them. And he speaks very sharply about that. But then even you have, for example, a number of Achronim, the Maratz Chayas and the Tzitz Eliezer, argue that maybe that's only Torah Shebaal Peh. Maybe there's a difference. Maybe you're not allowed to teach them Chumash, but you're allowed to teach them Nach. And there's a lot of discussion about that, including, for example, what happens if basically you're teaching Torah for the sake of Jews and Goyim are overhearing. For example, you have Shiurei Torah on the radio and on TV, and nowadays on the internet. So would there be such a problem? Would there be a problem with such a thing? So Rav Moshe, for example, writes that not, that you're teaching it for the sake of Jews. The fact that there are Goyim who are overhearing and will come across it as well doesn't prevent you from doing it. So there's a lot of ink has been spilled about various aspects of this issue. And then again, also, if we're saying that they can learn their Sheva Mitzvahs, well, given that they also have to believe in Hashem, for example, then that also there's quite a bit of things that we can teach them in that connection that are necessary for them in order to keep their Sheva Mitzvahs properly and in order to believe in Hashem properly, and therefore that also you have that's a consideration as well. All right. So now let's get back to on Daf Nun Vav. We started talking about the Sheva Mitzvahs of Neinoyach. We had the basic list of Sheva Mitzvahs that were given by the Tanakhama, and then we had a few Tanoyim that were adding other ones. So the first one was Reb Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Af Adam Min Achai. That Reb Chanina ben Gamliel had said, another Issur for Bnei Noach, not only Eva Min Achai, but also dam min achai, also blood from a living creature, says Reb Chanina ben Gamliel, is also specifically also to Bnei Noach. So the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. Ach bosa benafshe domei lo sechelu. The pasuk says that to Bnei Noach, this is to Noach and his family. However, meat when it's life, domei is in its blood. Lo sechelu, you should not eat it. So zeh eiv menachai. So the Tanakhama of this Braisa says that Pasuk is teaching us the Isser of Eva Menachai for Goyim. So in other words, don't eat meat while the life is still in the meat, which would be Eva Menachai, because that would be, in other words, you pulled off from a you pulled off from a living animal. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, af adam min achai. Rabbi Chanina ben now Tosfos points out we had the pasuk Vayitzav Hashem Elokim previously on Nun Vav Amud Beis, from which we learned all of Shavu Mitzvot Bnei Noach. Then why do we need this? Why do we need this pasuk for Eiv min achai according to the Chachamim? So Tosfos says because the Gemara is going to explain the Gemara is going to explain that that it means that shrotzim are mutter for them. So it's really the pasuk is not so much coming to teach us that Eiv min achai is also to them, but rather to tell them that shrotzim are mutter to them, even Eiv min achai of shrotzim. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel af adam min achai. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says that also blood from a living creature is also to bnei noach. So my time did Rav Chanina ben Gamliel. How does he learn that way? Because Kori be bosa benafshalay seichel, dome benafshalay seichel. He says you can reread the pasuk. You can take the words benafshalay seichel and apply it to both the blood and the flesh. Ach boser. However, flesh benafshalay seichelu, when it's still living, that would be even achai. Don't eat it. And also separately, since it also says domai, then we can also learn benafshei domai lo sechelu, when don't eat its blood. Domai benafshei lo sechel, don't eat the blood when there's life in it. So according to him, therefore, so dam menachai would be also as well. Verabonon, what are the Chachamim answer back to that? They say ahula mishri shrotzim would also. That pasuk is coming to tell you that ev menachai is mutter by shrotzim. So we talked about the other day that shrotzim are defined as creatures that either don't have legs or that have very small legs, and you can't really see them. You can't really see them walking. So they include the shmona shrotzim, whose dead bodies are matame. They include other kinds of things in the category of shrotzim. So the point is that all of them then. As the Gemara is going to go on to point out that there's a difference in them, there's a difference with them as between their blood and their flesh, as far as in halacha, that there's a distinction regarding their blood that there isn't by animals, and therefore we're saying they're in a different category, and the concept of Eiv Menachai, therefore we're saying, does not apply to Shrotzim, for Bnei Noach, that is. So then the Gemara is going to explain. The Gemara is going to explain later actually, what it is like this. No, it's not later. It's over here. What it is like this. When it comes to animals, for us Jews, there's a difference between the flesh and the blood of the animal. The flesh of a dead animal is matame, and a nevela is matame. The blood of it is not. But when it comes to shrotzim, then we say ein damam cholok mibesoram. There's no difference in halacha between their blood and their flesh. When we say that a kadosha, a lentil sized piece of a sheretz is metame, then it includes both the blood and the flesh. So therefore, since we see that by shrotzim, for us Jews, there's no difference between the blood and the flesh, then therefore the Chacham are saying, the Pasuk is also saying, that for Bnei Noach, there's no difference in shrotzim between Eiv Menachai and not, and it means that Eiv Menachai would be mutter to them. So, Kayotze B'dover, Ata Omer, you have a similar distinction in a Pasuk as far as Jews. The pasuk says, "Rak chazak levilti achol adam." Only be strong, not to eat the blood. Ki adam wa nefesh v'gomer, because the blood is the living is the living soul of the animal. Now the pasuk continues over there. V'leisaychal nefesh imah baser. The pasuk continues, "Don't eat the life force with the meat," which means, in other words, there we also learn. So there we also learn Eiv Menachai. So the pasuk also says rak so therefore so we darshin rak chazak levilti achol adam ze eiv menachai ki adam wa nefesh ze adam menachai. So we learn from the double expression in the pasuk, when it says don't eat the blood refers to eiv menachai, and when it says ki adam wa nefesh means blood from a living animal. This is in parenthesis, and agros agrot changes the gears over here, but anyway the point is that we learn from that there's an isser for Jews of Eiv Menachai, and there's also an isser of Dam Menachai. So therefore, we see by us Jews, there's both Isurim, and Rav Chanina ben Gamliel holds that both Isurim also apply to Bnei Noach. V'rabbanan, and the Chacham answered back, "Hahu l'dam hakoza shanefesh yotze boy hu da'asa." That pasuk is coming to tell us that also, for example, if you were to let blood from an animal, if you were to take blood of an animal while it's alive, and that blood is vital blood, and then the nefesh yotze boy, the animal's life would leave it if you bled it enough. So that kind of thing is also also. In other words, the point is, it actually explains if it weren't for that, you would think only dam shchita is also. Since the pasuk says this issue of blood in connection with shchita, so you would think it means that only the blood of shchita is osur to us, but blood of hakaza is not, of bloodletting is not. So now we're saying that no, it does apply as well. And Rashi refers to a Gemara in Chrysos that talks about the blood comes out in different colors. So we're talking about the oxygenated blood that comes out bright red, as opposed to you have the deoxygenated blood that comes out darker, where there's no chiyuv karis for it, even though it's still osur, etc., etc. Anyway, the point is that we see that according to Rav Chanina, we see that there is an issur for us Jews of Eivim and Achai and of Bosom and Achai. So Rav Chanina ben Gamliel holds that the same thing is true of Bnei Noach as well. Okay. So now the Gemara says, well, in that case, then, if we have this Isser of Avram and Achai for Bnei Noach, why does it have to be repeated for us Jews? Aren't we also included in Bnei Noach? So the answer is Kedir Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina. This is like what Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina says. Da'om Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina, kol mitzvah shenemra l'vnei noyach v'nishnes v'sinai, any mitzvah that was told to Bnei Noyach earlier in the Torah, and then it was repeated at Har Sinai, then it means lozev lozen nemra. Then it means that it's addressed to both. We Jews, even though we are biologically descended from Noyach, we're a separate mitzios of our own. And therefore, so a mitzvah, in order for it to be binding on everybody, then it has to have been repeated twice, once to Bnei Noach, and again to us Jews by Har Sinai. Livnei Noach, v'loy nishnas b'Sinai, but if it was said to Bnei Noach, but not repeated at Har Sinai, l'Yisrael nemra v'loy livnei Noach, then it means it's addressed exclusively to us Jewish people and not to Bnei Noach. In other words, until Matan Torah, it would have applied to Bnei Noach as well. But then afterwards, it was taken away from them and given exclusively to us Jewish people. Now, what does that mean? V'onu ein lanu ela gidan nosha. Now, the only example that we can find of that is gidan nosha v'al liba de Rabbi Yehuda, according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Namely, In Masecht Chulin, now you have like this. Where does it say about Gidan Noshe? It's in Parshas Vayishlach, in connection after Yaakov fought with the Malach there. And the pasuk says, "Alkein lo yoichlu bnei Yisrael as Gidan Noshe." So Rabbi Yehuda holds that means right from then and on, even though Yaakov and all his descendants are still considered bnei Noach at that point, it was already also to them. By Matan Torah it continued to be also to us, as opposed to the Chachamim hold over there that no, the mitzvah to not eat Gidan Noshe to begin with was given by Matan Torah just like all the other ones, except the Torah writes it over here because the Torah writes it in context of the event that happened, but it was not binding on them before Matan Torah according to the Chachamim. So now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, since it was binding on them before Matan Torah, then, but it's not repeated anywhere else in the Torah, then that would mean that it's only for us Jews and not for Bnei Noach. So that would be a case where it's also only for us Jewish people. And then the Yad Ramah points out if there were any other mitzvah, therefore there any other mitzvah like that, then maybe we'd learn from Gidan Noshe, but then in practice there is no other such mitzvah that is said only once in the Torah and not repeated to us Jewish people. Tosfos points out, by the way, when we said before that a goy is not allowed to rest on Shabbos, that's not counted in this category because the fact is we have a mitzvah to rest. And we have a mitzvah to rest, and the mitzvah is given to them specifically not to rest, because lo yishboisu, like we said before. All right, so let's analyze this. So the Gemara says Omamar. So let's analyze this. Kol mitzvah shenemra levnei noyach v'nishnes b'sinai lozev lozen nemra. We're saying that if a mitzvah was given at Har Sinai, that was told originally to Bnei Noyach and then repeated at Har Sinai lozev lozen nemra, then it means it was said to both Jews and goyim. The question is, Adrabba, why should we say it should be the other way around? Mi d'nishnes b'sinai, because it was repeated because it was repeated by Har Sinai, shouldn't that mean Yisrael Nemra v'lo levnei Noach? That means that it's addressed only to us Jews and not to the Goyim, because they weren't given the Torah by Har Sinai. And the answer is no. That's that. The point is just that. Mid isni avodas kachovim b'sinai. Since we see Hashem repeated the isser of avodah zara by Har Sinai, va'ashkechon de'onash avodas kachovim ilavel, and we find that goyim are punished for avodah zara. As for example, we talk about, for example, that the seven nations of Canaan are being expelled from Eretz Yisrael, among others, because of the avodah zara they did. So therefore, and again, if they're punished, it means they had to have been warned. Shmamin olo zev olo zenemra. So that shows that such a thing has to have been addressed to both Jews and goyim. So in other words, it's not when we're saying, when Hashem says it by Har Sinai, he's saying not to take it away from. So the point is that not to take it away from Bnei Noach. It remains by them as well. But now what it means is that it applies to Goyim and to Jews. The Rambam, by the way, mentions the point that when the Goyim keep their Shev Mitzvahs from Bnei Noach, it has to be because Hashem gave those mitzvahs by Har Sinai. So that fits with this Gemara over here that was saying that it was repeated, and the point of repeating it was to say that it applies to them as well. Otherwise, we would say it applies only to us. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. What about the second group? Levnei Noach v'loy nishnis b'sinai. We said, when you have something that was said to Bnei Noach and not repeated at Har Sinai, l'Yisrael nemra v'loy levnei Noach, then it means that it was said only to the Jewish people and not to Bnei Noach. So the question is, Adraba, midla nishnas b'sinai fakert, if it wasn't repeated at Har Sinai, l'bnei noyach nemr v'loy l'Yisrael. Maybe it means it applies only to Bnei Noyach and it doesn't apply to us Jews. So maybe it means, in other words, it was binding on us until Matan Torah. And let's take, for example, Rashi mentions, let's say Gid Anoshe. Maybe it was mutter to them. Maybe it was also to them when they were Bnei Noach. And now, when it came Matan Torah and we gained a new status of Jews, then maybe from now on it's mutter to them. So the Yad Rama says, listen, by Gid Anoshe, it explicitly says, Alkein lo yoichlo bnei Yisrael. It's Gid Anoshe. So the question would be other kinds of things, which the Gemara is going to point out, that you have other examples of mitzvah. You do, in fact, have other examples of mitzvahs that were not repeated to teach us that they're obligatory on bnei Noach and on Jews, but they're repeated for other reasons. So the Gemara is asking that maybe it means that they're only binding on bnei Noach. And the answer is, it's a logical thing. Also, there's no such thing as something where something would be mutter for a Jew, but also for a goy. So in other words, the point is that Hashem gave us the Torah is not to take away mitzvahs from us; it's to give us more mitzvahs. So if a mitzvah is not repeated, it can't mean it's only for them and not for us, because that would defeat the whole purpose. The whole point of the Torah is to add us more mitzvahs. Tosfos points out, so you know, we said before, for example, Ovid Kachavim Shashavas, where for them they're also and for us it's a mitzvah. Fine, the point is there is a mitzvah of Shvisas Shabbos. It just applies differently to us than to them, but you can't say it's something that's mutter to us and also to them. And then you have other example. Tosfos says that what about, for example, we learned yesterday that abortion is also for Bnei Noach. The answer is, well, it's not mutter for us. It's also for us. It's just not Chayiv Misa. So for them, it's Chayiv Misa. So, Tosfos actually ends up saying, though, that if it comes to abortion to save the mother's life, whereby us Jews such a thing is mutter, Tosfos says maybe even for Bnei Noach such a thing would be mutter as well. So the logic is you can't have an entire mitzvah that's an obligation on them and not an obligation on us, because that's not how the Torah is working. So therefore, the very fact that it says it only once means it's only for us and not for them. All right, the Gemara says, "V'loy, you're telling me you can't find an example of something that's mutter to Jews but also to Bnei Noach? What about Yifas Toyar? We Jews are allowed, but we learned in the Gemara earlier on Daf Nun Zayin that Goyim are not. If they go to battle, they're not allowed to take a Yifas Toyar." And the answer is Hosam Mishum Delav Bnei Kibush Ninhu, because they don't have the ability to conquer in the same way that we Jews do. Meaning, in other words, now the Gemara elsewhere explains that Goyim do have the legal right to conquer land, and when they do, it's considered theirs. We have, for example, let's say that Sichon conquered the lands of Ammon and Moab, parts of the lands of Ammon and Moab, and that's considered his legal conquest, and then we Jews are allowed to take it from him. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara points out in other places in that Gemara and in other places that they only have kinyan mamon when it comes to the people that they capture. When it comes to their avodim, they only have a monetary ownership of them. They don't actually own their guf, unlike a Jew owns an Eved Kanani, he owns his actual guf. So therefore, so they don't have enough of a degree of ownership in halacha for them to be able to take a yifas toya, whereas we do. So that's not a matter of that something is also for them and mutter for us, because really what it means is they don't have the legal ability to be koina such a thing. All right, the Gemara says, v'habradi pachas mishava pruta. What about stealing less than a shava pruta, which we also learned on Daf Nun Zayin that a ben noyach would be chayav misa for that, and a Jew is not. And the answer is hosim b'shum d'lav b'nei mechila ninu, because the fact is there it is actually considered gezel. It is also for a yid as well. Just the yid doesn't have to return it because the other yid is moichel it, as opposed to by b'nei noyach b'shum d'lav b'nei mechila ninu, they're not moichel on even less than a shava pruta. So therefore, the issur of gezel remains, and there's no way to counteract it. But that doesn't mean that's something mutter to Jews. And here we're saying you can't find an example of something which is mutter to Jews and also to goyim. Well, a Jew is not allowed to steal less than a shava pruta either. There are several explanations among achronim what that means exactly. Does it mean the Rama wants to learn that it means that a yid who's stealing less than a shava pruta is not over on an issur of Torah at all, as opposed to earlier we learned that he is. And then another explanation is we're talking about whether he has a mitzvah of hashava, where a yid has a mitzvah of a heshev asagzela, and the goy does not. And then the Oruch HaNer explains that either way you're also to steal, but by a Jew it's also as chatzit shir, but by Ben Noach there's no difference, and the point is, by Yisrael, it would really be included, even less than a Shavu Prota, but a Yid is Moichel. So several different ways of explaining this point. All right. Next, we said, Kol mitzvah shenemer levnei neach v'nishnes b'sinai. So let's go back to the beginning of what Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina was saying. Why are we going out of order over here? The Yad Rama explains, first we were explaining his reasoning, where he gets this logic from, and then we're going to ask questions on, don't we find there are exceptions to this? So kol mitzvah shenemer levnei noach v'nishnes b'sinai, we said any mitzvah that was told to b'nei noach and then repeated at Har Sinai, lozev lozen nemra, is told to both Jews and b'nei noach. What about v'harei mila? What about the mitzvah of Mila? Shenemer levnei noyach, it was told to Bnei Noyach, namely again, Avraham was still a Ben Noyach at the time. Dichtiv v'ates brisi sishma, Hashem tells him, you should guard my covenant. V'nishnis b'sinai, the mitzvah of Mila is repeated by Har Sinai, uva yom hashmini yimol, because it says on the eighth day you should make a bris Mila, and yet l'Yisrael nemer v'lo levnei noyach, and the mitzvah of Mila is given only to the Jewish people and not Bnei Noyach. So that goes against Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina's rule. The answer is, that's not telling us, that's not repeating it in order to make it obligatory on goyim, but rather, that's coming to tell us that a bris can be done when it's on the eighth day, even on Shabbos. So vayim hashmini means even on Shabbos. So it's not coming to repeat it in order to broaden the scope of who it applies to, but to tell us a detail in it that we wouldn't have known otherwise. All right, what about the mitzvah of Pruvu, which was originally said to Bnei Noach? Dichtiv, Hashem tells Noach and his family, v'atem Pruvu, v'nishnis b'sinai. And the mitzvah of Pruvu was repeated by Har Sinai. Shenema, because it's not Shenema, because the pasuk says, Leich emor lahem shuvu lachem la'olechem. Hashem tells Moshe, you tell the people, return to your tents, which also means return to normal family life. Here we had that before Matan Torah, they were off limits to their spouses, Al Tigshu Alisha from this week's parasha. And afterwards, Hashem is telling them, shuvu lachem la'olechem, return to your tents, return to your family life, and continue to have relations and have children. So Lisyon Nemr Veloy Livnei Noyach, and the mitzvah of Pruvu is said only to Jews, not to Bnei Noyach. Tosfos points out, well, Taka, maybe not. Maybe it is a responsibility of Bnei Noyach. It's true, it's not included in Sheva Mitzvahs, but fine, we said before that Sheva Mitzvahs don't include things that they have to do. So Tosfos says that it really means that it is considered also a Shev Val Tasa, because it's telling them they're not allowed to be Mashchis Zera. They're not allowed to waste seed.
That's included in that's a facet of the mitzvah, pruvu. And if that was an obligation on goyim, then it would be included in their sheva mitzvahs. Which it comes out from Tosfos in that case that goyim don't have a mitzvah of hashchosas zera, unlike we Jews have a mitzvah not to. That also factors into the whole discussion that we were talking before about abortion, because early on in the pregnancy, then there's not necessarily an issue of killing the baby, but there may be an issue of hashchosas zera. Because after all, it's a potential life. But we're saying, according to Tosfos over here, that goyim are not obligated in that. With that said, there is a shiltus that says that maybe goyim are not per se obligated in pruvu, but there is, on the other hand, the expression in the pasuk lo latoyu bro l'sheves yitzara, that Hashem made the world to be settled and inhabited, and goyim at least are obligated in that as well. So they do have a mitzvah to have family lives and to have children. Just maybe they don't have the mitzvah of pruvu as we do. Anyway, the point is that, but no, according to Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina's rule, pruvu is said twice in the Torah, once to Bnei Noach and once to Jews, and according to his rule, it should be an obligation on them as well. And the answer is no, because that's not repeating it to tell us that to tell us who else is obligated is a. That repetition of it by Matan Torah is coming to tell us the concept that when something was made osir by a vote of Beis Din, then you need another vote of Beis Din to take it away, even if the original reason doesn't apply anymore. The Gemara discusses this in Masechta Beitza. So for example, so here, Hashem had told them before Matan Torah that they have to stay away from their wives. If it hadn't been for the words Shuvah Lachem La'aleichem, then we would still say they have to stay away from their wives. The reason doesn't apply anymore, because the reason was to prepare for Matan Torah, and Matan Torah already happened, but still Hashem had to explicitly tell them that it's mutter. So we learn from that that if Beis Din makes a gzera, then it remains also unless, even if the reason no longer applies. So therefore, so again, that's not coming to tell us that it's an obligation on Bnei Noach. Well, the Gemara says, Yehochi, if you're going to start going like that, that every time that a mitzvah is repeated, we can find a reason it's repeated, kol chodeh v'chodeh nami, name it mishum milsa isni. You could say every time that it's repeated to tell us another detail. So then in that case, then what's the point of Rabbi Yossi Reb Chanina's rule at all? When is there a time when we're saying that something is repeated and it does mean that it applies to Bnei Noach? So the answer is Hochi Karmer. As Hora, mi hadera misna balamali. The point is, of Rabbi Yossi Reb Chanina's statement is, why would it have to repeat the warning again and again? Meaning, in other words, when you have mitzvahs that there was already a warning before Matan Torah by Bnei Noach that they were also in them, there would be no reason to repeat that same thing again, like we said before about Avodah Zarah. So therefore, the fact that it does repeat it means that it's for both Bnei Noach and for Jews. Mila and Piri Verivya, those are not azhoros, those are not warnings, those are mitzvahs asay, and the Torah is repeating them to tell us certain other details in them. But when we talk about, for example, Avodah Zarah or Shvichus Damim or other things like that, and then we're saying the Torah repeats it again, and it means it's for and it means that's both for us and for Bnei Noach. So things where there's an azhara, things where there's a warning, then when it repeats it, it means that it's for both. And actually, then the point is that in that case, then in that case, the vote would be then. So why don't we say that the reason it's repeated by Bnei Noach is to tell us that maybe you should say that the very fact that the Torah repeats it means that so Maharsha Shaw discusses Maharsha discusses at some length over here that when we have a mitzvah repeated, that it's in order to tell us that it's repeated in order to say that it's for the goyim as well. So you have the Maharsha Shaw discusses at some length over here details within that of what exactly we would have thought to learn from Mila and Piri Verivya, that in fact, and say that maybe Bnei Noach are mitzvah in them as well. Therefore, the Torah has to list the Sheva mitzvahs, including Avodah Zarah and other such things, has to repeat them by Har Sinai to stress that only such things are mitzvah on them, but not mitzvahs, I say. Otherwise, in other words, the Torah didn't have to repeat anything at all. So the Gemara says, we said before, v'onu ein lanu ala gida nosha bolvad. So we say the only mitzvah that we can say that is repeat, that's said and never repeated again, is gida nosha v'alibad Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it was an obligation on the sons of Yaakov, even while they were still considered b'nei Nayach. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. We just said before then, Bris Mila and Piri Verivia were not repeated again, because again we said the repetition was meant to teach us certain dinim in them. So in that case, what do you mean? The only one we can find is Gidan Osha. You have those examples as well. And the answer is Hani Isni Lashum Mil Saba Alma. The point is they were repeated after all. It is repeated to tell us other dinim, but the fact is they were repeated. But when it comes to Gidan Asha, Loy Isni Klal, it Bechlal was never repeated, which is why we're saying Onu Ein Lonu. You want to have an example of a mitzvah that's said only one time in the Torah, and it's not for B'nai Noyach, is Gidan Asha. But it's true that Mila and Piri Vidivya are also not repeated in the sense that even though they're repeated, it's for a different purpose. Okay, so the Gemara says Ibori Seima. Another answer you could say, the question was before again, why don't we say that Mila and Piri Verivya should be obligatory on Goyim as well, given that they were repeated, and according to Rabbi Yosi B'Chanina's rule, they should be. It means that there should be an obligation both on us and on B'nai Noach. So the first answer we had said is because Piri Verivya and Mila, when they're repeated, is to tell us other details in them. Now the Gemara answers Ibori Seima. Another answer you could say as follows, at least as far as Mila. Now, yes, it is repeated, but Mi'ikra la'Avram hu dekamazu le'rachmana. It's to begin with that only Avraham and his descendants, where Hashem tells him to keep the mitzvah of B'nai Noach. So to begin with, it was never given to the rest of B'nai Noach. Because Hashem tells him, Va'ata es brisi sishmer, you should keep my bris, ata v'zaracha acharecha l'doroisam, you and your descendants after you throughout their generations, implying ata v'zaracha ein inishachrin aloi. So it only applies to you and your descendants, nobody else. So we can't say, in other words, that it was something which was said to B'nai Noach and then repeated by Har Sinai. It wasn't said to all of B'nai Noach. Originally, it was only said to Avraham and his family. So at least that is not part of Rabbi Yosi B'Chanina's rule that something that was said and then repeated is for both us and for B'nai Noach, because to begin with, this one wasn't said to B'nai Noach in the first place. All right, the Gemara asks, Elamat B'nai Yishmol L'chaivu. By that logic, if you're telling me that Mila is an obligation on Avraham and his family, then the sons of Yishmol should also be chayiv. They're also descended from Avraham. And the answer is no, because as the pasuk says, "Ki bi Yitzchok yikara l'chazara," Hashem tells Avraham, "Only in Yitzchok will be called your descendant." So Yishmael, even though biologically descended from Avraham, is not considered a descendant of Avraham for that purpose. He himself, Yishmael himself, had a bris milah, as it says in the pesukim in Parshas Lech Lecha, but his descendants are not obligated in it. The Zohar, by the way, makes a big deal out of that bris of Yishmael, and says, in the schus of that is why Yishmael and his descendants have been able to rule over Eretz Yisrael for so long. In the schus of that, and eventually, when that schus is used up, then they're going to be dislodged and lose their hold over Eretz Yisrael altogether. Okay, what about the Gemara says B'nai Esav L'chayvu? What about the descendants of Esav should be chayv because they're descended from Yitzchak? And the answer is Bi Yitzchak V'loi Kol Yitzchak. When it says Ki Bi Yitzchak Yikar L'chazara, means within Yitzchak himself, there's not all of them are considered the sons of Avraham, only Yaakov and his descendants, not Esav. So therefore, Mila applies only to the ones who are considered Zarei Shel Avraham, namely us Jewish people. All right, the Gemara asks, Maskif Lerab Oshia, Elameata B'nei Keturah Loi L'chaivu. By that logic, then, the descendants of Keturah, the sons or the descendants of Keturah, the six children that Avraham had with Keturah at the end of Parshas Chayesara, Loi L'chaivu, they should not be Chayiv in Bris Mila, because after all, they're not part of the Jewish people. Ha'omer Rabbi Yosi Ba'oven Mi'itemer Rabbi Yosi Ba'chanina Es Brisi Heifar L'rabas B'nei Keturah. And yet we have where Rabbi Yosi bar Oven, or some say Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, says that B'nai Keturah, or that when a Pasuk says as Brisi Heifar, the Pasuk says he has, if a person fails to get a Bris Mila, as Brisi Heifar, he has violated my covenant, and therefore he's Chayiv Kores, and that includes B'nai Keturah, that they're also Chayiv. So that being the case, then it means that so it comes out that B'nai Keturah are in fact Chayiv. Now, who do we mean by B'nai Keturah over here? Rashi explains, and so do a number of other Rishonim, that it means specifically those six who were born to Avraham. Their descendants are not. On the other hand, the Rambam learns that it means their descendants as well. The Rambam says, even nowadays, B'nai Keturah, if they can identify who they are Chayav and Mila. Nowadays, the Rambam says, B'nai Yishmol and B'nai Keturah have gotten all mixed up. Your average Arab is a mixture from B'nai Yishmol and B'nai Keturah, and therefore they should do Bris Mila, but they're not Chayav Misa if they don't, because they're not Chayav Misa or Kores or whatever if they don't, because we don't really know whether they're from B'nai Yishmol or B'nai Keturah. Going on, the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab, Odom HaRishon lo hutu lo basal achila. Odom HaRishon was not allowed to eat meat. Now, we learned a few days ago that Tosfos had learned that meant he's not allowed to kill animals for their meat. Tosfos had learned that in fact, he would allowed to. If an animal died by itself, it would have been mutter, which is why Tosfos said over there why he needed to be given the mitzvah of Eiv Menachai, that he can't pull a piece off a living animal. There are different other opinions about this. The Yad Ramah explains that no, it means that Hashem had told him what he's allowed to eat, and meat wasn't included. So it's not that there was no loises that don't eat meat, but Hashem only gave him permission to eat to eat plants, and Hashem did not leave out. Hashem left out meat, which therefore, so he's like a servant in a house, for example. He can't just eat whatever he wants. He can only eat what he's given permission to. So therefore, so in effect, therefore he was all loy huto. Loy means it was not mutter to him specifically, but it wasn't said that it was explicitly also either. As the pasuk says, the pasuk says that all the plants will be available for you to eat, and the will be available for you for food, and for all the animals in the world. Implying so that it's available for you and for the animals to eat, but the animals living on the earth are not for you to eat. So you're not allowed to eat them. Again, according to Tosfos, the vote would be he's not allowed to kill them and eat them. According to the Yad Ramah, he's not allowed to eat them at all. But then when Bnei Noach came after the Mabel, Hitu Lahem, then Hashem was matir meat for them to eat. Shenemak, Yerak Esav, Nasati Lachem Eskol, as the Pasuk says, Hashem says, I've given to you like the plants, like the herbs of the field. I've given you everything, which means that you're allowed to eat animals. There are a lot of different explanations why that is. After the Mabel, people were weaker, so therefore they needed the strength you get from eating meat, that Noach had taken care of the animals in the Teva, and they owed their lives to him. And therefore now we're allowed to kill them and eat them. There's also a vote, I think, from Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch that says the problem was before the Mabel, people were thinking if we're not allowed to eat animals, then we're on the same level as the animals. That would be why, the same way as you can't kill a person, you can't kill an animal. So you have like PETA nowadays, you know, they think we're on the same level as the animals, and therefore they acted the way they did. So like this, the Torah is stressing that no, we're higher than the animals and they're available for us to eat. Whatever the case, continues the Braisa, well, in that case, you would think that maybe the Isser of Eiv Menachai doesn't apply if you're allowed to eat anything. Talmud Loima, therefore the Pasuk is Ach Bosa, but Nafshe, Domo Lo Sechelu, therefore the Pasuk continues that flesh, when it's blood, when its life is in its blood, you should not eat, which, as we learned, I know what Aleph meant Eiv Menachai. Yochol achle shrotzim. So you would think that includes shrotzim as well. Maybe Eiv Menachai applies to them as well, like we talked about before. No, Talmud Loima, ach, therefore the pasuk says, ach, however, and that's a mute. So the Gemara says, my Talmudah. Yeah, but how do you get from the word ach, that it means specifically to exclude shrotzim? Maybe it excludes something else. It could be, for example, that behem of achaya. Maybe it means that domestic and wild animals are exempt from eiv menachai, and shrotzim are chayiv. And how do you know the other way around? So the answer is, as we said before, because the pasuk is showing that there's a distinction between dam and basar. And why does it say domay benafshe? It doesn't even need to say the word domay at all. We know from other psukim in the Torah that a nefesh huadom, that the life force is in the blood. So it means misha domay cholok mebisarei. Means that the din of eiv menachai for bnei noach applies only to creatures where the blood has a different status than the flesh. So by animals, by behemoth v'chayas, where the dead body of an animal is metame, is in a vela, but the blood of it, is not. As opposed to by shrotzim, where the blood and flesh are not considered separate things, where a kadosha. So first of all, it means a kadosha, a lentil-sized piece of a sheretz would be metame, even if it's part blood and part flesh. But it also means In other words, that when you have the Isser for us Jews of eating shratzim, it includes their blood. There's no separate Isser for the blood. It's all included. It's all included together. So if a person, Rashi brings from a Gemara in Krisus, that if a person were to eat blood from a sheretz, he would be chayev for eating from a sheretz, not for eating blood, because that blood is not considered something separate from the flesh. So therefore, so the pasuk by mentioning domei benafshoi means that when it comes to creatures where the dam and the basar are one and the same thing, namely shratzim, then goyim are allowed to have evim and achai from those. Okay, so having mentioned this point that other medicine is allowed to eat meat, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, discussing this point. Is it in fact so? Don't we see Psukim that seem to imply that he was allowed to? And we'll discuss that more on Matzah Shabbos, Be'ez Hashem.